Hi, I'm Iris Dorbian. I'm a journalist, and I'm the author of An Epiphany in Lilacs, and I'm talking to Rabbi Saul Solomon of Days Gone By on UNC Radio.
Oh, shalom, my friends. This is your old pal, Rabbi Saul Solomon, founder and spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And, oh, if there's something that I love even more than theater and music, it's talking about the Holocaust, because what Jew doesn't? And I'm getting to do that with an old friend of the neighborhood. Her name is Iris Dorbian. Now, you might remember her from reviewing theater. She used to work for theater journals and websites, but she's moved over to the business world, but the creative urge is still inside her, if I may be so bold. So now she's writing also fiction and personal related books. So it is delightful to have Ms. Iris Dorbian back in the neighborhood to talk about both her professional writing and the personal stuff that she's doing, including her novel, An Epiphany in Lilacs in the Aftermath of the Camps. Boy, doesn't that sound like fun. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back Iris Dorbian. Shalom, Iris.
Shalom, Rabbi.
Oh, boy. So you went for big laughs and comedy in this new book, An Epiphany in Lilacs. First of all, tell us what made you write a novel?
What made me want to write a novel? Honestly, a lot of this story is loosely based on my father's personal experiences. My father was a Holocaust survivor, and when he was 14 years old, he was liberated by the British in Germany, and this was May 1945. And I remember about 20 years ago, he started telling me stories about what happened to him when he was in the DP camp after the war, when he was recovering from various illnesses and then trying to move on with his life. And I was very struck by these stories. They were very intriguing to me, and there was a whimsicality to it that I found very arresting, because he was talking about his friendship with an older German Gentile who befriended him in the hospital. He was talking to me about a theater troupe that he joined while he was in the DP camp, and all this while trying to find what happened to his mother and his two sisters from whom he was separated from. So when I was thinking about writing a story about this, I wanted to flesh out the narrative from short story into something that's longer form, but at the same time, I opted a little more for fiction because just to give me more of a distance from the story and just to give me more of a creative latitude so I could fill in the gaps with some details that weren't in my father's story. So I do use my dad's story as the inspirational basis for what happens to Daniel, who's the main character, but at the same time, I wouldn't call it a biography, because it's not a biography.
Fair enough. Now, let me ask, was your father one of those people who, at least for the first 20, 30 years that you knew him, as it were, as your dad, who didn't talk about World War II, the Holocaust, all of that, and then later he finally opened up? Or was he always telling the stories? You just started to really pay attention 10, 20 years ago?
Yeah. I was always cognizant of his being a Holocaust survivor. I always knew about it ever since I knew I existed. I always knew that he had been in the camp.
And by the way, let me ask you, it was a DP camp.
But wait, he didn't like talking about the details of what happened to him during the war. And I remember when Steven Spielberg had that Shoah Foundation. You remember that Shoah Foundation?
Yes.
When they were interviewing Holocaust survivors for the for the archives at the Holocaust Museum in D.C.
Yeah.
And my father had been called a few times, and he wouldn't do it because he didn't like talking to strangers about what happened. However, he did like talking about what happened after the war, particularly when he was recovering. You know, it was sort of like it was very therapeutic for him, and he enjoyed talking about the garden that was in the hospital in the back. He enjoyed talking about the British medical professionals who took care of him. He enjoyed talking about that because it was like he was being reborn. And so that, he enjoyed talking about that.
Okay.
But he started really opening up to me about 20 years ago.
Hmm. Was there an inciting incident? Did you ask him and then blah, 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 blah? Or it just sort of naturally out of the blue? It's like, oh, let me tell you this story. Let me tell you that. Before I leave this planet, you need to know these things.
There are a couple of things. He had a few health scares.
Mm.
I think that mortality was weighing heavily upon him. And that, so that was one impetus. And it was also during the time when I would visit him on the weekends. I was living in New York, and I would come to Jersey just to see my family, and he would take me out to lunch. We would always like go to this particular diner where we would just chat on a wide variety of topics, from the sublime, like history, to the ridiculous, like our favorite soap operas.
Yeah. Okay.
and then afterwards he would take me on a drive, and he would just sort of talk about various things that were on his mind. And this was on his mind. But I do think that maybe the knowledge of his mortality was weighing heavily upon him, and that caused him to open up a lot more to me. Even though I always knew the basic trajectory of his personal experience after the war, but I did not know the specific details until 20 years ago.
Did he ever write it down? Did he ever keep a diary? Did he ever, or was all oral? Passed down to you
oral.
And
oral. He never kept a diary. No.
Okay.
Although, however, it was during this time, like well over 20 years ago, when he started talking to me, that he answered a query that was published in the Jerusalem Report from a World War II and Holocaust historian, very well known historian named Martin Gilbert, and he was also Churchill biographer, and he was looking to speak to people who had been in Europe during VE Day just to find out what they were doing, because he was writing this history about Europe on VE Day. And it was around this time that Dad was opening up to me, and Dad contacted me about this query. He said, you know, I'd like to respond to him. Do you think I should respond? I said, yes, Dad, absolutely. He's a very well-known historian. It's probably going to be included in his book. And Dad did. You know, and Dad wrote it down, just what happened to him during the war and what he was doing on VE Day. And
you got to read that at some point as well.
I got to, yes, he wrote it down. And then he gave it to me to proofread.
Okay.
This was before journalism school, but I proofread it, and I gave it some edits, but it really didn't need too much. My father was a very smart, self-taught man, and I typed it up, and I gave it back to him, and then he sent it to Martin Gilbert, and Martin Gilbert sent him a follow-up letter saying, thank you so much, and he had some other additional questions about what happened to him, and then Dad responded with another follow-up letter, in which I proofread, and sure enough, it was that it made it into the book. And we have an autograph. My dad got an autograph.
Sure.
From Martin Gilbert. And that's kind of what started it. And then he started opening up far more. And, yeah.
Now, I want to remind people that the name of the book is An Epiphany in Lilacs. In the aftermath of the camps, and you can get it in all the usual places, Amazon, Kindle, and paperback, Barnes & Noble, if there are any more Barnes & Nobles left. And it's published by, what is it, Mazo Publishers?
Mazo, M-A-Z-O, Publishers. It's a publisher that's headquartered in Jerusalem.
Ooh, how did you hook onto them? How did they find you, or you find them?
Well, when I was looking for a publisher, I felt, because this isn't exactly commercial fiction, I thought that the Jewish publishers or Jewish-focused publishers would be ideal. So I did some research, and they were on my list, and they were top of my list. And then I sent the manuscript to them, and they liked it, and that's how I found out about them.
Oh, that's why. Did you have to query first? Did you send, like, 10 pages, and then they asked for the rest? Or you just sent the whole thing off and said, hey, please give this a read, blah, blah, blah?
Yes, yes. I sent the whole thing off, and as well as a little query.
Oh, good. Now, this is not your first book. You wrote a book about the theater called Great Producers, Visionaries of the American Theater. This is back when you were more in the theater field, and we'll talk about that. And then also you had another small novella published. It was almost an autobiographical thing more than a novella. What was that?
That was called Love, Loss, and Longing in the Age of Reagan, Diary of a Mad Club Girl. That's my silly, wild, and woolly Romana Clef.
Oh, my goodness. I need to read that one. And is that also available on Amazon Kindle and stuff, or is it just an online? Where is that?
That's available at Amazon in Kindle version.
In Kindle version. But that was particularly autobiographical almost. I mean, or would you still call it somewhat fictional?
Semi-autobiographical, because there were a lot of things in there that didn't quite happen, but the basic outline was correct.
So it almost sounds like your new book is kind of the same thing.
Sort of the same, but not really, because there are characters in here that didn't even exist that I just made up. There's a character that Daniel becomes friendly with towards the latter part of the book, a young German county that he meets, who's also part of this theater troupe, and that is complete fiction. Complete fiction.
Now,
it was actually inspired by a photo that was in one of my father's old photo albums of this young guy, and his name is Johnny, and he wrote German to my father, and I just created this
a German named Johnny.
This photo.
Don't get many of those, let me tell you. Let me ask you, so the book came out very recently. What was the release date on this?
January 1st.
Oh, mid-mazel, like perfect day, the brand new year. Have you gotten reviews on it? How's the feedback been?
Feedback has been good. It's still a little early. I got a nice Amazon review of it. Which
good.
Five stars.
Ooh.
I'm hoping for some reviews. Probably I'll get something from the Jewish Book Council, so we'll see. I've been targeting the Jewish press.
Well, I mean, yeah, of course. Who else? I mean, well, Catholics also. They're sort of into the whole Holocaust and suffering and torture mode.
Well, you know, in the title, Ethnicity, that's actually, it's hilarious, but the first 2 weeks, it was selling pretty well, and in Kindle, I noticed that it was listed as Amazon's Hot New Releases, and you'll laugh, in Church and State, the religious spiritual category. It was hilarious.
Well, we do have a more churchly president now, so maybe that's why. And someone who kind of believes in torture, too. So it fits in his wheelhouse perfectly. Let me ask you, let's go far afield right now. As a Jewess, which you are, how do you feel about our new president of America? I love that sigh. He's pro-Israel, you gotta give him that.
I don't think we're gonna go to war against Israel. What do I feel about his relationship with Israel?
Well, I mean, as a president in general, I think we can all tell how you feel about that. But as a Jew person, how do you feel about having Trump and the Republicans back in power?
Well, okay. I'm a liberal. But one thing, though, that I seem to deviate from the liberal platform is the attitude towards Israel. I support Israel completely and utterly.
Yes.
And because I support Israel completely and utterly, that does put me at odds with a lot of American liberals, particularly New York liberals, who seem to look more askance at Israel.
Yeah. New York liberal Jews. who don't think Israel should have the right to exist the way it does. You know, amazing.
Yes, yes, yeah. So this is just one area that I'm completely aligned with the Republicans.
However, in every other possible area, ..
Not. Except for when it comes to Israel.
All right. I hear you. I totally and completely hear you. By the way, what was your Jewish background? Were you conservative, reformed, Episcopalian, what?
I was raised in the conservative denomination, and I had a bas mitzvah.
Oh! What do you remember about your bas mitzvah, Iris Dorbian?
Oh, this is pretty hilarious. Well, my birthday is in August, and my bas mitzvah was held like the last day of like the regular synagogue Hebrew school year, and it was like mid June. And I remember I had a long haftorah, and I remember that I grew up in Patterson, but the synagogue was in. No, I'm sorry. I grew up in Fairlawn, New Jersey, but the synagogue was in Patterson, and I remember it was kind of hot in that synagogue. And I also remember that that day of my bas mitzvah, the synagogue was. They were. Put this way, I got an award that day of my bas mitzvah as the most promising Hebrew school student.
Ooh.
I remember I got a book of Jewish folklore, which I never read. I gave to my father, and he read it every single day up until his death. And also, I got a candlesticks.
There you go.
My reward. But, yeah, I remember it was a very long haftorah, and I remember we had some of the festivities in the synagogue, and it was a very nice little spread afterwards, you know, and then afterwards there was a reception at my parents' house.
And by the way, I do mean to interrupt you, but I want people listening to this, and especially from the FCC, that in this interview, we have already used the words oral, DP, and spread, and they've had nothing to do with what you're actually thinking about. Please, Iris, continue.
No, not at all. God, those dirty minds.
Who? What? No, not me. Not I.
But anyway, so afterwards, you know, after I had my bas mitzvah, that was it for my Hebrew education. And I really never went to synagogue until, except for like the High Holy Days. I would go to synagogue, Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah. And it's interesting, but when my father died, I started going to synagogue again every Friday night up until the unveiling, just to say Kaddish for him. And it was very therapeutic. I started doing it in New York. I was living in New York in this conservative synagogue that was near Lincoln Center. I would go there every Friday night, say Kaddish for him. And then when I moved back to Jersey, about 6 months later, I resumed that in a Jersey synagogue.
Oh, so you're still, every week you go to shul still, roughly?
No. I did it, because that was just part of the morning.
Yeah, well, during that year, but after that year was over, you kind of...
That year, yeah.
Oh, shame on you.
Yeah.
Go back!
Yeah.
Go back! They want you, they miss you. They need your donations in the collection plate, let me tell you. But let me ask, as someone who, whose father went through the Holocaust in the camps, the DP camp anyway, and someone now who has written about the Holocaust, how do you reconcile, also as a modern Jewess, the Holocaust with a belief in God?
How do I reconcile the Holocaust with the belief in God? Well,
that's what I asked, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I per se have believed in the old-fashioned idea of God. I don't believe God is an old guy with a long beard, you know, playing a harp on a cloud, on a mushroom cloud above me. I believe in God.
That's Moses, by the way, not God. You're confusing the two men. But yes, continue.
Okay. I mean, I personally am not like maybe I call myself an agnostic or atheist, but I think I'm more spiritual in that sense. I do believe in karma. I do believe in that what you put out will come back to you, be it good.
Okay, yeah.
How do I reconcile my belief in them?
In other words, how do you, if there is a God, why would you let the Holocaust happen, et cetera, and so forth?
I am going to answer that.
Ooh.
I'm going to quote from a line that's in a Woody Allen film, like when the Woody Allen character says this to his father, he says, how the hell should I know? I don't know if the can opener works.
And that's really the best answer if you think about it. We're talking with Iris Dorbian, by the way, the author, or I should say authoress, of An Epiphany in Lilacs in the Aftermath of the Camps, published by Mazo Publishers, also the author of the book on great producers, also her Roman A Clef book about her own life as being sort of a wild and crazy slut of a thing in the club scene. But let me ask you, most of the time, at least in the early stages of when the producer of this program, Dave, knew you, you were in your theater phase. You had acted a little bit, and then you were writing and working for theater journals and professional and lighting journals and things like that. But you kind of had to give that up because of the nature of the business, and you moved really seriously into business writing. How is that move? I mean, you're writing things that you never ever thought you would be or could. Technical writing, business-to-business stuff. What is that like? How do you do that?
It's to the rational mind, it's a very bizarre digression. I agree with you. I was laid off in March 2010. And this was during the height of the recession. I was a group editor at a B2B publisher, and I was covering media, PR. And it was really a form, my reinvention was just a form of survival. It was either that or selling real estate, which I didn't want to do.
I hear you.
So I reinvented myself as a freelance business journalist, and I just—if somebody needed help with writing about small business, which I knew about because my mother was a small business owner, then I would just pitch in. And I just eventually—I had to do it because it was either that or I wouldn't be able to pay my bills, and I'd live on the street. So that's how I morphed from being this arts theater journalist into being the business finance journalist that I am now.
Do you understand? I think the people on Wall Street, 60% of what they think they know, they're really bullshitting everybody. Do you understand finance? Do you understand Wall Street and stocks and bonds and markets and business-to-business talk?
Certainly a little more. I certainly understand it better now than I did 8 years ago when I was a theater journalist. Now I definitely understand it. And you're right. There is a lot of BS involved.
Well, you can say the word. They run out on the FM. You can say bullshit. Say bullshit.
Bullshit.
Yes. So you still got a little bit of that wild slut in you. I knew it.
But I do find it fascinating, particularly when I'm writing about a private equity firm and they've raised like billions of dollars for fun. It's just fascinating just to hear about how much money is raised. An astronomical amount that's raised for investing in the financial technical sector or investing in pharmaceuticals. It's fascinating to me.
Now, has that made you... I mean, nobody gets rich from being a writer unless you're Stephen King. Has that made you want to become an entrepreneuress yourself or start your own business or invest in ways? Has that helped? Have you done that?
Well, I mean, what I have done is that I do some investing.
Ooh.
But as like an amateur, small-time, retail investor, I do invest in stocks and mutual funds. But that's really more like it's a necessity. Again, as I said again, about reinventing myself from a theater journalist to a business journalist, that was necessity. And this is also necessity because I'm trying to also build a nest egg, because you can't just rely on salary. Unless, of course, you are a CEO, unless you're Mark Zuckerberg, or you're...
Oh, wow.
you're our president.
Jeff Bezos.
Entrepreneur.
I hear you.
So who inherited most of his money, whatever, from his father, but that's something else, you know. But you have to look beyond that. And so, yes, I had to be entrepreneurial in my financial holdings. So
do you miss writing about the arts? Or
yes.
It's been long enough that, you still do.
Yeah, I do miss writing about the arts, but I have been, since last year, I've been a contributor to my friend Leonard Jacobs' site, The Clyde Fitch Report, which is an arts and political blog.
Oh, Leonard has been on this radio program. He's a friend of the neighborhood.
Yes, he is.
Yes. So it's the Clyde Fitch Report, if people didn't hear that. And it's a mix of both the arts and politics together. It's an interesting website. So you write for them?
I write for them. I have a column every month.
Ooh.
The nickname of my column is the Truth Sayer, because I am the Truth Sayer.
Okay.
And last year I blogged quite a bit about the election. And now that that's over, I'm blogging about the arts. We'll see. I mean, I might be interviewing the producer of a Broadway show coming up, but if that doesn't happen, I'll probably be blogging about this television show, reviewing this show, The Young Pope, that just started airing.
Now, my God. Boy, oh boy, talk about moving far afield. Not only did you move from the arts, you're now moving from the Holocaust to a pope. Please don't convert on us. We need more Jews like you, Iris. We hate to lose you. But we have been talking with Iris Dorbing. She is the authoress of An Epiphany in Lilacs in the Aftermath of the Camps. You can get that on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. On all, you know what? If you go to her website, irisdorbian.com, IRISDORBIAN, irisdorbian.com. You can get links to all the stuff that she does, to her various books. And what else are you working? Do you have a nascent idea for a next book at this point?
Actually, it's funny you ask. I just started working. It's just very early stage on this manuscript that's also another young adult story. It's inspired by something that happened to me when I was a kid. I was bullied when I was 13, 14 years old. And
who wasn't?
It was so bad that at one point I hid in the parking lot of the local VFW building, like a few times, rather than go to school and face my bullies, because it was just so terrible. And the teachers did not help. This was the 70s. It was not this big cause celeb that it is now, although I'm very skeptical that the teachers really help kids who are being bullied. I still don't think they do. But anyway, I'm using some of that to write this particular story that's set in the contemporary time period. It's not set in the 70s or the 80s. It's not period. And I'm using a program that I know quite a bit about that's based in the Berkshires. It was co-founded by Shakespeare and Company and a now retired juvenile court judge. And it's called the Shakespeare in the Courts Project, in which juvenile offenders are sentenced to Shakespeare as a condition of their probation.
Hey, at least they're not sentenced to Samuel Beckett. That would be so much worse, but yes.
And in this particular manuscript, the character she's sort of inspired a little bit by me, but not totally, because there's a lot in her story that's not my story as well. Not at all. But she has just been, she's been bullied relentlessly by this girl. Finally, she snaps, and she beats the hell out of her, and she's being sentenced to this program that's inspired by this program that I know a great deal about, that I'm going to be creating a fictitious version of it. So that's it, and that's what I've just started, and now, and I just started this manuscript, she's being sentenced to this program.
Oh, my goodness. So, I mean, I just love that you're able to carve out parts of your time for writing what you have to as far as business, parts of your time for trying to market your material, and time to write something new. I think that's really the best kind of writing life that you can have. Don't you agree?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I mean, it is. It does get kind of hectic, especially when you think to yourself, okay, I really want to write this, but if you really want to do something badly, you'll find the time for it.
Oh, I do everything badly. I find the time to do everything I do badly, let me tell you.
well, that's another thing. Badly, but if you want to find the time to do something, you will do it.
Well,
that's how I face life. That's how I think about it. So.
Well, I'm very glad we found the time to talk with Iris Dorbian and that she found the time to talk with us. Remember her website, irisdorbian.com, her book, An Epiphany in Lilacs. Iris, I wish you much more writing success, career success, more creativity, and just don't get too into that Pope program where you're no longer Jewish. That would scare me. But otherwise, I think you're doing great. And it is lovely to have you once again in the neighborhood. By the way, last question. What's your Hebrew name?
Irit.
Irit Dorbian, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Solomon. It's been a pleasure.
Shalom to you.